has asked me to speak a little bit about how do we stay engaged, compassionate, and have concern about the world, climate change, etc., and still, quote-unquote, let it be. I mean, I think, yeah, that's the big conundrum, you know, the paradox about, which we have been trying to kind of speak about it today, and the Noble Eightfold Path, you know, is a very well-trodden template, you know, since over 2,500 years. And it's the middle way, you know, between getting lost in conventional experience and at the same time, you know, kind of getting lost in an ultimate viewpoint, you know, which can sometimes in modern jargon called like spiritual bypassing, you know. Either, you know, spacing out into kind of philosophies about the way things are, or getting completely bogged down and lost in the particulars of our personal experience. And the Noble Eightfold Path, or the middle way, is between those two extremes, you know. And if we veer too much to one side, we have to come to the middle. If we veer too much to the other side, we have to come to the middle. And that's a very delicate balance, which, you know, we become ever better at that balance through being more familiar with the way things are. And the meditation is the tool for that. And what is, you know, kind of let go of increasingly and ever more, you know, is actually our attachment to our personal preferences. And, you know, it's not that we shouldn't have any personal preferences, that is even necessary, you know, to know what you want and what's good for you in terms of food, or what kind of a profession you'd like, or which color you like, and so on, because it's all, you know, good stuff, if it's, you know, if we can manifest it in our lives. But to also not be completely kind of defeated and lost if we can't manifest it. So it's that middle way, you know. We do have preferences. When I go to the ice cream shop, you know, I know exactly which ice cream I'd like to have, but then if they don't have it, I can eat something else, it's okay too. You know, this kind of a stance on life. So it's very well to enjoy the things which we find, you know, bring us joy, but to not be completely dependent on always having our way. And that's, you know, what the Buddha is speaking about. And in the scriptures, you know, what's the definition actually? What is the noble truth of the cessation of suffering, the third noble truth? So literally speaking, you know, what is written in the scriptures here, it is the remainderless fading and cessation of that same craving, the relinquishing, leaving behind and renouncing of it. Such was the vision, insight, wisdom, knowing and light that arose in me about things not heard before. So that's how the Buddha defines, you know, what the third noble truth is. And how, you know, how we can come to that point, you know, that letting go happens, because it's not something you can willfully do, but you can kind of apply, you know, the insight meditation instructions and different other methods, so that the mind which is trained in this way is going to let go at one point, you know. And it's the bearing with the way things are, which is like getting the mind ready for letting go. So there's a lot of patience, you know, necessary for the practice. And then, you know, in the scriptures also, in the, you know, the Buddha speaks about, for example, you know, the necessary qualities we need to have for practice. And also in particular when he speaks about, you know, monastics, what qualities, the foremost quality is simply patience, you know. So it's a very important quality to develop, and it's not easy to develop, especially in this culture, you know, whereas everything is on our fingertips, generally, if we have the means, you know, to get all of those machines, and it's all about speed, but in reality, you know, there is not less confusion than there was before. There might be even more, because there is so much more information available, but and lots of it is completely useless, really. And you know, I think once it was a real power to have a lot of information, and in this day and age, the power is to know, you know, which information to not touch and which information to look for, you know, because there is so much available. And you know, one way, and Diane has already touched on that, you know, how the Buddha kind of suggests that we encourage ourselves, you know, to look in the right way is by recollecting those five subjects, which I'm just gonna quickly, you know, kind of introduce to you. And Diane spoke already about the most powerful one, which is Maranasati, a reflection on death. But there's, you know, traditionally there are five, and it's a chant we do in the monastery regularly. And the first one, the first line is, I'm of the nature to age. I have not gone beyond aging. To just, you know, remember that every day. Second one is, I am of the nature to sicken. I have not gone beyond sickness. The next one, I am of the nature to die. I have not gone beyond dying. And then the fourth one, all that is mine, beloved and pleasing, will become otherwise, will become separated from me. That's the fourth one. When we die, you know, we can't take anything with us. Only, you know, the quality of our mind comes with us. And that's the fifth one is about that. And karma means, you know, actions with intention. I am the owner of my karma, heir to my karma, born of my karma, related to my karma, abide supported by my karma. Whatever karma I shall do, for good or for ill, of that I will be the heir. So, you know, those five reflections, if we really kind of take them in, you know, really fully take them in, you know, they can have quite a sobering effect, you know. And they can help us to really seriously look at our priorities, you know, and what we are doing with our time and with our energy. And, you know, that takes a lot of kind of patience and courage to really look at one's own life in this way. Because usually we are afraid to do that, because then we think, oh, God, then I have to change something in my life, you know. And yes, I mean, if that's really what comes up, I think it's a great thing to know, rather now than lying on the deathbed, you know, and then regretting because we haven't done this or that. So it's a really good thing to do, die before you die. That's one of the, you know, very powerful reminders as well, you know. Die before you die. Just, you know, reflecting on this. And, you know, what would you have liked to do with your life? Like imagining lying on the deathbed, you know, looking back. Would you have, you know, engaged in the way you're doing it, or would you have wished to do it differently? Because if you would wish that, then do it, you know, change it. Today, you can just today, now. And those five subjects, they're really powerful reminders. And, you know, and also at the same time, you know, those five contemplations, you know, we can apply them to ourselves, we can apply them to others, we can apply them to our pets and to anything, you know. We can, and in the end, you know, even to our planet. It's going through the same phases, you know. Phases of kind of arising and ceasing, and whole civilizations have arisen and ceased again. Species, stars and planets and everything, you know, is going through the same arising and ceasing process as we do. And it's, I think it's a very sobering way, you know, of looking at our situation just right now, where Diane was saying should speak a little bit about climate change, where, you know, you probably all noticed and read and heard, you know, that we have again like a record hot year now and lots of fires burning, and in other places on the planet, you know, lots of flooding and melting of the ice shield and so many, you know, things happening. And it looks like, you know, even we know this for quite a long time now as human beings, we haven't been able to make enough changes, you know, so that this process is kind of arrested, but we are still contributing to it, and there's so much kind of different opinions being thrown back and forth, so that it's, you know, action is mostly happening not powerful enough, and somehow, you know, that can really bring up a feeling of like great helplessness and despair, and also fear, you know, about where is this all going to go and how is it going to be, you know, maybe not for us, but at least for our children or grandchildren. This is a very scary thing to think about. But I think it's very important to allow those thoughts to arise, you know, and to familiarize ourselves with it, because it's, if we don't allow, you know, that way of thinking, then it's much more unlikely, you know, that any kind of real, that any right action can emerge. So it's really necessary to open ourselves to the possibility, you know, that the civilization we know and we are part of might not be there forever, and no civilization before ours has ever been, you know, lasting for more than a few thousand years. So it's a good bet, you know, that this one will have a similar trajectory. And I think that's a very important thought to allow to come to mind, you know. And I've brought a reading from Thich Nhat Hanh, you know, who is a very famous meditation master in the Vietnamese Zen tradition. And this book is called The Other Shore. It's about the Heart Sutra. And, you know, you all have heard probably that saying, you know, form is emptiness and emptiness is form. So that's the Heart Sutra. And he has commentaries on the Heart Sutra by Thich Nhat Hanh. And he also speaks about climate change. And the chapter is called The Moon is Always the Moon. And, you know, what he's saying with that is, you know, there's always arising and ceasing is happening. You know, the moon is a full moon and then half moon and new moon, but it's always the moon, you know. Even we see only, you know, once at a certain time in the month we say it's the full moon, but it's just the moon, you know. And then another time we say it's half moon, but in reality it's just the moon. It's just what we are seeing. So he, you know, makes us aware is, you know, that our experience, we always see our experience only from our own standpoint, and it's not that there's anything bad about it, but it needs to be balanced, you know, with ultimate truth. And then at the same time, you know, if we just don't care at all about the situation and also think, oh, the moon is always the moon and I can just do what I like, then we also have to come to the middle. So that's the middle way between the two extremes. So I'm just going to see how long I'm going to read, because I'm not quite sure how that will land with you. The Buddha advises us to look deeply into the nature of our fear and the danger that we face. This civilization of ours will have to end one day. It cannot escape dying, and its death will only be accelerated if we continue to live as we do with this much greed, anger, and delusion. The life of a civilization is like the life of a human being. On the phenomenal level, there is birth and there is death. And maybe after the death of our civilization, the earth will regenerate herself and new civilizations and species will be born, which will be our continuation. Death and birth continue each other. So from the perspective of the ultimate, there is no birth and no death, no increasing, no decreasing. Arising and ceasing, it's in the Pali Canon. Nothing can be lost. So we have to accept the death of our civilization. There's something nice about accepting death. It's a kind of relief. Because death is something you cannot avoid, so you have to accept it. I know a nun who lives in Hanoi in Vietnam, who was told by the doctor that she had cancer and that had just 3 months to live. First, she was very shocked. She didn't believe it. She protested. She got angry and she was overcome by fear and despair. But at last, she was able to accept the reality of her own death. She wrote to me in France to say that she wanted to come and live in Plum Village for a few months before going back to Vietnam to die. And so we invited her to come. A few days after she arrived, the nuns proposed that she go to a doctor to see what was going on in her body. She refused, saying, "No, I don't need to see a doctor. I have accepted my own death. I came here not to see doctors, not to treat my disease, but just to live with you in the time I have left to live. All I want to do is to try and live every moment deeply with Thich Nhat Hanh and with the monks and nuns in Plum Village." So she didn't go to see the doctor. She tried to practice mindfulness in every moment, in every activity, throughout the whole day. As it happened, because she was able to live in that way and because she accepted her own death, she was truly at peace. After almost 3 months, her visa was about to expire, so the sisters urged her once more to go and see the doctor, just for fun. This time she accepted. The doctor examined her thoroughly and declared, "Well, we can't believe it, but the cancer has receded and you're quite strong now." She went back to Hanoi and lived for another 15 years. There are many stories like that. They show us that we can accept the truth. They show us that when we can accept the truth, we have peace. And when we are at peace, we can heal. If we can accept the truth that by continuing to live like this, our civilization will be destroyed and many hundreds of millions will die, if we truly accept that, we'll have peace. Otherwise, the despair, the anger, and the fear may cause us to panic and thus bring about the end of our civilization more quickly, before the worst effects of climate change even take force. And then there's another chapter about, and that's called, "What is to be done?" Should I read that as well? Would you like to hear that? So what is to be done? We have to accept reality as it is. Once we are freed from the fear and the terror of our civilization being destroyed, we will know exactly what to do. We will be able to come together and apply the solutions available to us in order to save our planet. According to the United Nations report released in November 2006, just reducing our consumption of meat by 50% could already be enough to save our civilization. And that is something we can all easily do. And we can really all easily do that. We can start today. Our fear has the potential to destroy us. But if we are able to look from the point of view of Mother Earth, with the insight of no increasing, no decreasing, we have a chance to transcend our fear and wake up. By seeing from this cosmic perspective, from the perspective of the Heart Sutra, and by fully accepting that our civilization can be destroyed, we may yet have a chance to save it. According to the Buddha, you have to save yourself first, and then you will be able to save the planet. It's like in the airplane. We have to put on our own oxygen mask first before helping someone else. Once we have overcome our fear, we can help others to do the same. Practicing mindfulness and helping the whole human race to wake up is the only hope we have to save our civilization. If we can truly understand the insight that brings us to the other shore, we will be able to help bring about a collective awakening. If collectively we are liberated from our fear, we will know exactly how to live in order for us, for our children, and for our civilization to have a future. We fear our own death because we think that after we die, we will not be a human being anymore. We will go back to being a speck of dust. We think we will be somehow diminished. And we fear the death of our civilization because we think that after it is destroyed, it will also be just ashes and dust. It will be less than it was before, and much that was sacred, good, and beautiful will have been lost. But this is not true. A speck of dust contains the whole universe. If we are as big as the sun, we might look down on the earth and see it as insignificant. As human beings, we look at dust in that same way. But ideas of big and small are just concepts in our mind. Everything contains everything else. That is the principle of interbeing and interpenetration. This sheet of paper, or this book, contains the sunshine, the logger, the forest, everything. So the idea that a book is small or insignificant is just an idea. We cannot destroy even a book. We are incapable of destroying anything. The people who assassinated Mahatma Gandhi and Martin Luther King Jr. hoped to reduce them to nothingness. Yet, they continue to be with us, perhaps even more than before, because they continue in other forms. We ourselves continue their being. So let us not be afraid of being destroyed, individually or as a civilization. Let us not be afraid of diminishing. It is like the moon. We see the moon waxing and waning, but it is always the moon. So, you know, that is a very, big way of looking at things. But that's exactly, you know, what the Buddha is suggesting. You know, that we take a step back and not get lost, you know, in our preferences, but see the bigger picture. And from that, seeing the bigger picture, a peace can come to us, you know, which is like a surrender, you know, which comes from understanding, you know, that we are part of a very big process. And we certainly have a part to play, but we have to do that in cooperation, you know, with the whole universe, so to say. And through the practice of meditation, you know, we are learning how to tune into that process more and more. And we're letting go more and more of our own preferences in the sense, you know, that we want only pleasant feeling and we don't want unpleasant feeling, because that's really what drives our preferences. And that's like, surely, you know, feelings are very happening all the time in our lives, and they are part of our evolutionary kind of equipment, you know, to actually survive. They have a lot of information they hold, you know, but we cannot arrange our life around having a lot of pleasant experience and ideally not no unpleasant experience whatsoever, because it's not going to lead to any peace. And it's certainly not going to be successful anyway, because it's impossible to do this. But I think it's very important to wake up to the fact, you know, how we tend to attach to pleasant experience and we tend to want to get rid of unpleasant experience. To really kind of observe that in oneself is a good thing to do, you know, that this is like the primary kind of driver. Pleasant and unpleasant, you know, constantly running after pleasant feeling, trying to avoid unpleasant feeling. And frittering away a lot of time by doing this. And then some people, you know, work a job which they don't like at all, have a lot of unpleasant feeling there. But then when they come out of the work, they with the money, you know, they going to buy all kinds of things to have pleasant feelings or get resourced enough, can go back to the job next day. And it's pretty counterintuitive, you know, to do this with one's life. I think it would be much better, you know, to get a handle on this and to see it, to see the context, and from that seeing, you know, to make some steps in a direction where we see our whole life more as a practice rather than as a, you know, as doing as the culture expects us to do. And, you know, this passage I read from Thich Nhat Hanh is, I think it's very much opens up the mind in a big way, you know, and sets, you know, our little lives in a much bigger context, which is, you know, I find it very inspiring, really. And you know, just wondering, you know, if any of you would like to kind of comment on what I was reading or ask something. Or what would you think? What should we do now?
Two things, I think. One is, as all of you come to my Dharma talks here, you are all teachers, and I always look forward to hearing what you are dealing with. What are you letting go of? What are you now working with just letting be? And would you be willing to share that? And if we could do that for a little bit, and then any questions you might have of Aya?
Or of you?
Or of me? Feel free to ask them. Aya is only here once or twice a year, so, you know, take advantage of having a monastic woman here. So, yeah, I would love to hear anything anybody has about letting it be, looking at their lives, seeing what's important, letting go. I know lots of you have stories because I've heard them. It's just, this is a safe place to talk about. Yeah.
But I had checked with a couple of people and said, well, hey, why should we be happy that God for free, you know? And I thought, you know, aren't we trying to reduce suffering? And what is it going to get you, Cecilia, if you get all upset about this? And so I decided then that I was just going to let it go. And it turns out that his wife was outside the next day. And, you know, I said, well, you know, I see so-and-so would send me, you know, cut this. And she goes, well, you know, it's like his ministry, and I can't interfere with it. And so anyway, that was kind of her take on it. And so I feel good that I've let go. I have to admit that sometimes I go back and think, you know, I don't think that he should have done that without asking me if, you know, I need a little help and he could do that. But, you know, where's that going to get me? He's probably going to, you know, he is the way he is. So just let go. He didn't really wreck the bushes, and they got cut, and the new gardener came the very next day and cut the one bush that had been left. So that was that.
Thank you. Hey, Fred, could we get a microphone in case anybody else has something you want to share? Thank you. Anybody else?
He in the first row.
Thanks, Fred.
I'm slowly giving up the idea that I can fix my suffering by just willpower or doing this or doing that. And I find that the more I give up on that, the less suffering I have. So it's completely counterintuitive, but it works.
It makes all the sense in the world. It's like we've been talking about all day, not walking away from anything. Life, as I was saying to somebody the other day, if we didn't have suffering, we wouldn't know happiness. We have to have both. It's the way life is. And if we can just accept this is the way it is right now, I'll do my best, but this is the way life is, it's not so painful. It's just the way it is right now.
And also, I don't make it worse.
Yeah, exactly.
Because when I struggle with it or try to fix it, just with some active mental will, then it just makes things worse.
Absolutely.
And if I don't, then awareness tends to work on things.
That's right. Thank you, Joe. Anybody else? Yeah, Amanda.
Hi. I'll try to keep it short. A lot of what you guys have said today has been very... it's every time I go to a day long, like what I hear falls in line with kind of what I'm dealing with in my life. And right now, I grew up very, very, very poor. In like the 90s, we lived in a house without running water for a while. And I was really determined as a child and as a young adult, like not to live that way and not to live in other ways where we had harmed one another in the family. And as a result of that, I worked very, very hard and I went to law school and I graduated with distinction and I passed the bar the first time. And 2 years into my career, I got my dream job, and I'm very financially secure, and it's a very good job for a young lawyer, and it's something I can do for a long time and retire from with a lot of security. And I quit yesterday. I realized I wasn't spending enough time with my family. I realized I wasn't living my practice in my whole life and that I was suffering a lot because of it. Because when I would do things and grow a little bit inside or get a better perspective, I'd always end up because I was clinging so much to the job and the career and all the hard work that I've done and what a great young lady I was and can be and what a grown-up professional I am now, all that clinging was making it hard for me to go with the flow and accept the truth about the world and my life and the nature of existence. And so I spent a couple months dealing with that. Well, more than a couple months, like a year and a half, but the past couple months have been intense, and came to the conclusion that I needed to walk away from that stuff. And that little part of me that's like a little girl dressed up in a suit that says, but I did it, but I did it. She's fighting really hard right now, but it's going to be okay. Thank you.
Thanks, Amanda. And not to say too much, but Amanda's an extraordinary person, an extraordinary prison volunteer.